Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We are located on beautiful Vachon Island, rising above the waters of Puget Sound between Seattle and Tacoma and the beautiful state of Washington. And that was the voice of Brian Brown, who is the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. And Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less, but he always offered more. This is the Briefly, and today is going to be a Truman Show, what we laughingly call the Truman Show. And that's generally because we don't have a guest, so I have to kind of wing it, but... Today we may have a brief mystery guest. I'm just holding out to see. I haven't told these guys yet who that might be, but we'll see. We'll see if they're able to get here. But I'll start off by introducing our panel. We've got, of course, the legal consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Fulbright Scholar, and fellow treetop flyer, Mr. Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Briefly. It's good to be here. Beautiful day.
It is indeed. And we've got the avid defender of justice, a mariner, cyclist, top secret engineer, and someone I owe a huge public apology to, and that's Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin. Oh, wait a minute. Let me get you on here. There we go.
Hey, we're emerging from the rain into the last throes of sunshine, sun rays coming through the trees here just above Burton Peninsula. It's awesome
it was,
day to be here.
I'll tell you what, it was blinding in the studio this morning. The sun was just at that right angle where, man, oh, man, it was just, I couldn't believe it.
You get a little sunshine coming direct through, like, the windshield, and then it's reflecting off the water that's still on the roadway, and holy smokes, yeah.
Perfect.
It's a solar event.
We also have a part-time Politico, the head of our Islanders for Fair Action group, and a full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. It is beautiful. The leaves are red and orange, and the air is crisp. The sky is blue. Man, it's a Chamber of Commerce kind of day here on Vachon Island.
I just heard from a friend of mine who's back in Upper Peninsula in Michigan, and he said, man, you cannot believe the colors here. Yeah. He said, we've got reds and yellows and browns, and he said, it's just spectacular. So, sorry to be missing that. Also, historian extraordinaire, professor, down under aficionado, and our own guardian of the galaxy, Mr. Bruce Hallman. Bruce. Hey,
good to be here. I can echo everybody else. This is sort of the perfect time of year on Vachon. It's cool in the morning, it's sunny in the afternoons. It's just sort of, it's a glorious place to be.
Indeed. But we better enjoy it while we can, because
exactly.
I understand it's going to be a wet winter this year. So, oh boy. Well, I'm sitting here behind the big red switch on the board at the Gene Bosch broadcast studio in beautiful downtown Vachon. I'm a retired airline pilot and morning DJ, and I've come up with a new name. It's a Texicanon. Mm-hmm. I'm both Texas and Montana, so there you go.
As opposed to a Texarkanon.
Huh? Oh, gosh, yes. I don't want to be one of those. Although when I was in the Army, I had a really good buddy that was from Texarkana. And we were in basic training at Fort Polk in Louisiana, and we got a three-day pass. We actually had a three-day pass. It was pretty amazing that they let us have that. And right in the middle of our training. And, of course, we were not supposed to go more than, like, 50 or 25 miles or whatever it was. We went in and rented a car, and we drove to Texarkana. Oh, man. We had a blast. Of course, most of the time was spent on the road, but we were just doing it because we could, you know. Or actually because we could.
Or because you shouldn't.
Because we shouldn't. That's more like it. That's right. That's right. So, hey, as we always do, I got to check in with everybody and see what they did this past week. Craig, let's start with you.
I had a pretty eventful week. I won't get into details because some of this we'll talk about later. But one, my lovely wife went up into the mountains again the last several days and was bringing out hunters, bringing their camps out on horseback. Mm-hmm. And you reminded me of when you were talking about the leaves back east, the larch up in the Sawtooth are like neon, you know, yellow. They're just gorgeous. We had our Brown Brieflies at the voice competition. We will talk about that a little later. That was a lot of fun. Something that wasn't quite as much fun, but wasn't so bad, as I got my shots. I got my COVID and my flu shot. No side effects, except I had a little trouble sleeping on one arm.
Night. Can't imagine why.
Just a little sore on that on that one shoulder. Yeah. Then I went to a couple of shows at the wine shop with Chris Anderson. They were both wonderful, wonderful shows. And last but not least, Lynette and I voted.
So you got that done already.
Got that done, right.
All right.
You never know. It's like eat dessert first.
You never know what might happen. That's right. There you go. All right, Bruce, how about you?
Well, and sort of an amazing week with my wife had a last Tuesday. I was not here.
Yes.
And I missed the performance.
You did.
But my wife, Pam, had her appendix out, you know, and for somebody who's over 70, having their appendix out is needing to have your appendix out.
Kind of
it's
a big
unusual.
Deal. Yeah.
If like you're 13, that's
you're getting your tonsils out.
Exactly. But the operation went very smoothly, and she's back home recovering. And it was all done laparoscopically, so she's got three little punctures in her stomach area and sort of hurts when she laughs, hurts when she coughs, but other than that, she's doing really well.
Yeah, so just don't tell her anything funny.
Exactly. I try to suppress my humor.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's not easy.
It's not hard for me to do.
Yeah.
And we pulled the crab boat out. Crab boat up on a trailer under a cover and sort of buttoned down for the winter. It's a real end of summer kind of ritual you go through. It's sort of like Craig putting his antique cars away for the winter, just sort of something you got to do, but it sort of ends the summer. It's a real marker for everybody.
Oh boy, that's for sure. Ooh, I hate to even think about it, to be perfectly honest. Oh gosh. Kevin, how about you?
Well, I've had my my share of winterizing, so the outdoor faucets are all covered up, and the boat, the freezable water lines on the boat are now secure and hopefully won't cause any problems come spring. Let's see, there's a couple of announcements to make. One is that if you're a member of the Vashon Maury Community Council, I just got my ballot to vote for new incoming board members literally within like the last hour or so. So it might be a test. It might be a test ballot. So I think the officials come out maybe tomorrow or the day after. So look forward to seeing who's going to be on the board there, and you can cast your vote yes or no for those candidates. And otherwise, been looking forward to having a little chat about the voice as we continue on the show.
All right. Well, we do appreciate that. And Amy, how about you?
Yeah, it's been a busy advocacy season, as you might guess. Last week, I did a press conference on Pier 62 with labor interests in the fight against 2117, which would strip a lot of funding from the ferry boats, 25% from each of our new electric boats. Would strip away all the shore power funding for our electric boats. Hybrid electric, excuse me.
Yes.
Coming online, and would do quite a bit of damage in a transportation budget that is already pretty hollowed out. So did that, and then was one of these beautiful days over there in Seattle, but got to be with the folks from IBEW, the Longshoremen's Union, Washington Conservation Action. Really good. And I think there was some pickup too. So we are speaking out for our boats and our environment. And then last night was at the Washington State Ferry Marine Labor Unions for Ferguson event, fundraiser over town, and got to hang out with their six. There are, gosh, I think there's a total of 12 labor unions that are involved with the boats, and six of them were there last night and had an interesting discussion. The one of the guys from the Masters, Mates, and Pilots Union was very much towing the line and saying, no, you know, it's electrification or nothing. If we can't get these boats, we're going to be years and years in the drawing board again. And, you know, that's sort of the line we're towing is we don't want to go back to the drawing board. But then I talked with a guy from the Marine Engineers Association who said, no. Couple, 3 years, we get those diesel boats just right up online going for you. So the Masters, Mates, and Pilots and the engineers, the above and below deck, seem to have differing opinions.
Well, that's not unusual.
I kind of figured
At all.
I kind of figured that. Yeah. But that was exciting. And, you know, we are excited. Seems like Ferguson has a real plan for the boats. It was really obvious by the way that he spoke about our crisis that he had done more than the top level reading, that he had dug deep and had some conversations. So potentially excited to see what might happen under that administration should it come to pass.
Yeah, I was at a fundraiser where he spoke, and of course it was all on the island here. And the first thing he said was, "I'm going to fix the ferries." And we all went, "Yay!" You know, he's got our vote if he does that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, folks, our mystery guest has arrived. I'm so excited, ladies and gentlemen. We have Helen Pendergrass. Good morning, Helen.
Another famous Vashon voice.
Indeed. How are you this morning?
Oh, man, I'm doing okay this morning. It's pretty crazy at work today.
Why is it?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Well,
really? Nice to have a break, actually.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I asked Helen if she could come today. She was the winner, you know, the People's Choice winner at the Voice. Mm-hmm. And man, you just knocked it out of the park, Helen.
Thank you. It was kind of crazy. I just went for the experience of it. I just went to, you know, have an experience and put myself out there and was not expecting to win anything.
Well, I can't believe you were all a cappella. No?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not only a cappella, but like I told you when I went in to get my shot the other day at the pharmacy, you hit every note dead center.
Right on the money.
You know? Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've practiced mostly a cappella. I don't usually practice with a backing track. Mm-hmm. I just don't feel as comfortable with that. Probably an accompaniment more than a backing track would be more comfortable for me. But
a piano or a guitar.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you play piano or guitar?
I do very slimly guitar. My partner is much better, but I play piano. I've been doing it since I was like eighth grade or so. It really helped with percussion ensemble. I was in that for, at least 10 years. From like sixth grade on to college. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved it.
You know, we all played piano when we were eight, but none of us play it anymore.
Right. Well,
because we never learned how to play it, except for Truman.
Well, I do play a little.
That's right.
But you know, what I found very difficult is singing with the piano while, I mean, it's like patting your head and rubbing your tummy. You
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
Do you have that? Do you find that as well?
Yeah, I get a little nervous when I'm playing piano. My hands get pretty shaky. So that's kind of like a nerve. Yeah. I'm already nervous. And so then that adds to
that
it.
That makes it worse, right?
But if I'm just playing piano, then I'm not as nervous. Yeah.
There you
I can breathe a little bit more, you know. Relax into it.
So, Helen, one of the things we always ask our guest is, what's your experience on Vashon? How did you get here, and how long have you been here, and all that kind of stuff?
I was pretty lucky. I was born and raised here.
I thought that was the case.
I like to say my claim to fame was that I was almost born on the ferry, and I'm sure there was a lot of folks like that, but my partner likes to joke with me that he calls me Helen Issaquah Pendergast. I'm like, yeah, that's hilarious. That's funny. Yeah. I don't think it was the Issaquah back then, but I've been here and I've just had like the privilege of staying here. I've got a really good community of people to kind of back me up and, you know, keep me grounded here. And I've just really enjoyed the artsy community that exists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just really enjoy it.
Well, I have to tell you that I was talking to her mom several years ago, mm-hmm. and she said, I said, just how old is Helen now? And she said, oh, gosh, she just turned 21. And I said, oh, really? I said, well, you know, of course, she looks like she's 12 still. And your mom said, and she hates that. She just hates looking so young.
I always wanted to look a little older. Yeah. And now, you know, I still get told that I look young, but I'm 30. and nobody believes me. And he's like, what? You look like you haven't seen any age or, you know, cynicism or anything like that.
So here's
the clean Vashon living.
Exactly.
It's the water.
It's the water.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was just going to say, very shortly, you're going to start liking the fact that you look so much younger. So I know how that is. But anyway, so how was the experience of the voice for you? Was it exciting? Was it scary? How was it?
I was terrified all day. I had like crazy stomach ache. I had like a headache. You know, I had never really felt that visceral of a reaction before for performing. I think just because I haven't done it for a long time, that kind of established like, oh, I haven't been up on stage for a while. I was doing it a cappella and I kept telling people that and they're like, oh, that's brave. And I'm like, who is that brave? I don't know. And then I started questioning my decisions a little bit more. I was like, maybe I shouldn't do this. But then getting up on stage, it was really an exhilarating feeling. You know, I just really enjoy being up there. It's something that a lot of people don't really know about me is that I like to be on stage and I like to perform more singing than like acting or anything like that. But yeah.
One of the reasons why it's brave is if you're singing a cappella, you can't blame your backup for starting out on a different key than you had planned on.
And you sound like you know about that, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Well, I've had that happen.
So Helen, I have a question for you. What are your techniques for calming your nerves there before you get in front of the spotlight?
Don't tell us tequila, please. No.
Well, I did have a glass of wine before I went up there. Yeah, okay, I was right. Like, I need a little like liquid courage, but not completely. No, I just. I had a really good group of people, you know, surrounding around me. My cousin came from Seattle and my uncle came and my partner was there. And I just had this girl group of friends that all came to support me. So that was really special. I just kind of take a breath and be like, you know, you can only do what you can do. And you can only present the most authentic version of yourself. And actually Guido gave me that advice before getting on stage. He's like, just deliver the most authentic version of you. And that's all you can do.
Oh, that was wonderful.
It was great advice. I was like, oh, okay, I can do that.
I can do that.
I can do that, yeah.
All right, so now the most important question. How did the Brown Brieflies do?
Right? You guys were so entertaining to watch. It was just like a nice breakup, you know, because all of us are so nervous.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. Yeah, all that talent and class and originality up on stage, we were a nice break.
Yeah,
right. Also, the dancing was really good. I love to dance, so it was really nice to have that little dance break in there.
Yeah. We enjoyed it very much. And listen, Helen, we enjoyed your performance, really enjoyed that very, very much. And from the voice of Vashon, we need to say thank you very much for participating because you made us a lot of money.
Oh, well, which is really
great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. No, it was really, really special and fun to perform.
Do you ever perform just sort of casually around the island or when can we catch you again?
I would really like to be performing a little bit more casually, maybe like trying out a couple more open mics. I know the Hannah Barn does some open mic things and some dances and such not, but I've already gotten a couple texts from people saying, would you like to sing in my band? And I was it'd be kind of fun.
Wow. Yeah, excellent. Kind of fun.
So
excellent.
I'd actually like to put myself out there a bit more than I have been.
Lucky us.
Like to see it. Yeah. Like to see it at the Coop.
Oh, mm-hmm. That would be awesome. I used to live at the Coop. It was
there you go.
So. I got an in already.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. Oh, yeah. That would be awesome. Yeah.
Well, now you got all the cred. You got the. Do you have a little trophy? Don't you?
I do. Yeah, I keep it on my. It's actually funny. Somebody that keeps coming in. He's just like, where's your trophy? You should have your trophy out. And I was like, it's at home. It's at home. It's on my dresser. I'm not that, you know. I wanna be humble about it. Yeah.
Low key.
Yeah.
Kevin.
So Truman, for folks who are listening to this but haven't had the pleasure of attending The Voice, I understand, isn't there a place people can go and find the recording?
There is, and thank you for bringing that up. If you go to thevoiceofvashon.org, you can click on, there's an actual logo of The Voice. If you click on that, you can go and actually see a recording of the whole darn show. The whole thing is on there, and they did a really nice job. Of the video, and I highly recommend it. You'll get to see Helen perform twice, which is pretty cool. And of course, you get to see the Brown Brieflies making fools of themselves. but we did have fun. We had fun doing it. So, by the way, your hat was over the top, Kevin.
Oh, outstanding. I need to check out the video. I was trying to make sure to get the lights glinting off the specs that I have.
Yeah. Great. Well, Helen, thank you very, very much for coming in. I know you're working today, and tell Tyler thank you for letting you come for a little bit.
Well, thank you for the relaxing break. This is wonderful. This is really nice.
Great.
Actually. Yeah.
Well, we thoroughly enjoyed having you, and we'll have to have you come back.
I would love that. Yeah.
Do they have us on the radio right now in the pharmacy?
No.
I bet somebody does.
Somebody might.
Well, anyway, thank you very, very much for coming. And we'll hopefully get you back.
That would be lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right.
Great to see you.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Indeed. Look forward to hearing more from Helen all the way.
Okay, the rest of our show is... today is a significant day. But there, you know, we always have it's National Something or Other Day. Well, this one really gets me. It's National Knee Day. K-N-E-E Day. Does anybody have any idea what that is?
I mean, think about a world without knees, Truman. Right.
Well, there is that. There is that. And believe me, when I wake up in the morning, I think about how nice it would be to be in a world without knees.
That's right. Yeah. Well, all of those who have titanium knees, it's a day to celebrate for sure.
There you go. Well, and it's also National Make a Dog's Day, and I think that should be every day.
Yeah, isn't that every day?
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one is National Nut Day. Now, I'm not sure if it was nut as in brown briefly, or if it's nut.
The edible nut.
Or the edible nut.
Maybe it's a day to celebrate Mr. Trump.
There you go. Oh, no, we're not going to celebrate.
I'm not sure nut is quite a strong enough
term. It's not quite strong enough. It's only 9 days until the Vashon celebrates Halloween uptown, which is always a great, fun event. Exactly 2 weeks until the presidential election on November 5th. 2 weeks, man. 90 days until the inauguration of the 47th president. I found in Today in History, there's some really interesting things. 1836, Sam Houston was inaugurated as the first elected president of the Republic of Texas. Hallelujah. I mean, how about that? 1836.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Exactly. And then in 1861, now this one is one that fascinates me. It's the first telegraph line linking the East and West Coast was completed. Now, this was today in October. Civil War started, what, in April?
April.
Of that same year.
Yeah, April 12th.
So isn't that interesting that even though the war had started and all, we're still, I mean, life goes on. I think of the Civil War as just being all-encompassing, that nothing else was happening in the world except that. That's not true.
Yeah.
Well, and you got to remember there was a real push to connect the West Coast because California was part of the Union. And, sort of keeping that communications open and making sure California, which was an anti-slave state,
right,
didn't get sort of overrun by, the Texans, if you will.
Yeah.
The telegraph line was an important strategic element of the Civil War.
Well, I looked online and there was a map that showed when all of the states joined the Union. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to see it. Of course, that Western progression. And in 1845, I think, was Texas. And then, boom, it jumped to California in 1850. And right after them, Oregon. And then not too long after that, Montana and Washington, then Idaho, and it came on across. But that was, I found that really interesting. 1845 to 1850, boom.
And that's interesting. 1861, that was 8 years before the Transcontinental Railroad was completed.
Yeah. Yeah. So they got the telegraph line in.
Right. Which is another sort of technology thing because it killed the Pony Express. It's sort of like, hey, this great technology. And the Pony Express was an incredible organization.
Yeah.
They had every 20 miles or so, they had stations.
It was only around for how long?
Oh, yeah, three or five years.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Like that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's so legendary.
Oh, yeah.
No, it was. I knew it was very short-lived.
Yeah, right.
And that's why.
Because telegraph.
Because the telegraph
just sort of made it.
And then, of course,
it was actually in Denver some time ago. I think it's closed now. Arlene's Steakhouse, I believe, was an old house along the route of the Pony Express. Oh. After the Pony Express quit, and they basically put a steakhouse in there. And Arlene's had a verbal menu.
A verbal menu.
Menu. Yeah, it's one of their other
claim to fame.
Characteristics. Yeah.
That would be an oral menu. All menus are verbal.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's that point. Yeah.
We have an attorney for a reason.
adding value every show.
That's right.
Not much.
You were speaking about the Civil War, and I always go back when I think about the reality of living through that, of Talking Heads' life during wartime. Where it's kind of like, you know, I need to go find some dinner now.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, 1879, Thomas Edison perfected the first carbonized cotton filament light bulb, which I thought was kind of interesting. And 1884, now this one is great. 1884, the International Meridian Conference in Washington, D.C., adopts the Greenwich Mean Time, that's GMT, worldwide, creating 24 international time zones, with longitude zero being at Greenwich, the Greenwich Meridian.
It's fascinating because that shows how Eurocentric mm-hmm. that whole concept is.
Yeah.
When you go to, if you think about a map of the world, you know, what's in the middle of the map of the world? The Atlantic Ocean. You know, the Pacific Ocean is on both sides.
Which is way bigger than the Atlantic.
Well, when you go to Australia and New Zealand, in the middle of the map is the Pacific Ocean. And if you turn the map upside down, what's top and center? Australia, New Zealand. Yeah. So it's all a matter of perspective, right?
That's right. I recently saw a map, a southern projection, mm-hmm. that I thought was absolutely fascinating, where you could see where the South America and Africa, right. the difference between them. I mean, mm-hmm. South America is like way closer to Antarctica. Yeah. But that was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Of course, now we use UTC, or Universe Coordinated Time. Mm-hmm. And of course, the airlines use that. And I spent the last 25 years or so.
24-hour clock.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah, 18, you know, you're using 1,800 hours, you know. But I had another hand on my watch that mm-hmm. pointed to UTC. And what was weird is that you would land sometimes, and I'd look at my watch and I'd say, now, what time is it really? I mean, can I call? Is it 4 o'clock in the morning? Or is it, you know, I mean, you did not know what time real time it was.
It's all a matter of perspective.
You needed that second Mickey Mouse watch.
Yes, that's right. You did, for sure. Okay, 1962 on this date, the Cuban Missile Crisis started with U.S. President John F. Kennedy addressing TV about the Russian missile base in Cuba. And imposed the naval blockade on Cuba. Boy, that was an extremely tense time. Those of us who are around remember that.
Was it more or less tense than 2 weeks out of a potential second Trump administration?
Oh, I think it was more.
Oh, yeah. that would have been perhaps instantaneous mm-hmm. annihilation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, right.
If the Trump administration comes along, it'll be a slower
term.
Annihilation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
so,
right.
Would you rather it be quick?
That's a good point.
Would
you rather suffer through it or get it over with?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, anything you do for long enough, you kind of get used to, right? Like if the Cuban Missile Crisis, the longer it goes on, the less you're like, eh.
That's
right.
True.
I mean, we're kind of in a way in the middle of a Cuban missile crisis with climate change.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
A lot of normalization of really difficult issues, right. if you will.
Yeah.
I was in college in Florida during that time, and it was before the interstates had been built.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for 3 days solid, army trucks loaded with men and materials and tanks and howitzers just roared down the highway right by the college for 3 days solid. And you sort of thought, this is something big going on.
This could be
big.
Because
you really got a sense of how the military buildup took place. Right. You know, now with the freeway system and airlifts and stuff like that. But in 1962, man, they were just using a straight old highway to run down.
You're going south, I assume.
Heading down to Miami. Yep,
wow.
Exactly.
Wow. You know, and I put a note in here, the Suki's connection, and what this is, when I was in Germany, I had an acquaintance, or actually became a really good friend. I spent Christmas with him at his home in Norway. But Asbjørn Suki was his name. And he had been with the embassy in East Germany after the war. And he was a bit older, of course, than I was. But he had made a big mistake. And I won't go into this long story. But anyway, he was shuffled out of the country in a hurry because he had really, really made a big mistake. And he ended up in a basement in Washington, D.C., and got retrained into imagery interpretation and whatever. And he was one of the guys who discovered the missiles in Cuba. And, of course, he was later in my intelligence unit in Germany. But I thought that was quite interesting. He had a really interesting background, but especially being one of the guys who set that whole thing off, which I thought was kind of interesting. And this day in history. In 1994, the state of Texas finally unveiled a statue to Sam Houston 58 years after he was elected president.
Yeah, so 158.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, 158 years. Yeah, I knew that, and I wrote that on there wrong. Yeah, but isn't that interesting?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, 158 years later.
Well, those Texans take time sometimes.
Well, you know, you got to slowly work into these things, you know. So local news, now we can talk about The Voice. We talked about it a little bit already, but that was pretty fun.
What was the fundraising total?
A little short of our goal, but there's still time for people.
Still right. Time to give.
We will accept donations anytime, day or night, 366. Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that, we always have, we set a minimum goal and then we set a stretch goal. And I think we came fairly close to the minimum, but missed the stretch by a couple of grand.
Yeah, I think so. I think we learned a few things. We might have been able to hit that goal had we had a little different choreography, not by us, Briefleys, but because our choreography
was tight.
Faultless.
It was tight.
Faultless. I mean, it really was.
Yeah.
It was
I thought you said thoughtless.
And thoughtless.
No. So thoughtful. Yeah. Are you kidding? Snap. Yeah. No, clap, snap, roll.
That was it.
And you were right on, Amy. I tell you, you had self-doubt.
Yeah. Did you practice?
Aaron, are you listening? I did not. No, but I'm teachable. That is one thing that I, if I am properly motivated by, say, terror, I am teachable.
You peaked at exactly the right time.
Right. Right. 9:02 p.m. on Tuesday, October
17th. 15th.
So tell people who was in that group, Truman.
Who was in our group?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was Kevin Jones was in the group.
That's right.
And sorry. I don't know what I didn't hear myself say that.
Well, I did the same thing. I thanked Arlette for loaning us the theater.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Instead of Eileen, it was close, but it was.
Oh man,
it's tough when you have to have people seeing your face.
Yeah,
when you're just spewing on.
Well, it's interesting.
It was a good association, Truman. You know, in other words, could have been some other folks.
Could have been worse. That's right. Yeah, at least you were with a cool guy. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, and what's interesting is I looked at the video of us, and when I said that, I saw the look on your face, and you were like. Yeah, close enough. I think that's what he said. Yeah. Yeah, just missed it by a few syllables.
Just a
few letters.
Consonant here or there.
Oh, God. Anyway, I was embarrassed. Later, I was.
Then we had Mike Shook.
Michael Shook was a lead singer. And, of course, Lynn Kerrigan was singing a harmony. And then, of course, they did the dance routine in the middle. That was so fun. Yeah, just
and
fun.
You can... I'm... calling back, right? You can still go see it.
It's
online. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you missed it, I had a really good time actually in the audience. You know, when I wasn't thinking about clap, snap, roll, roll. Yeah. It was really cool. It was a great community event.
Just another way of getting there. You can just go to YouTube and put in Voice of Vashon, and it'll show up right on top.
Oh, it will. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was just such a warm-hearted community event.
It was. Yeah. And everybody was so kind and supportive. I mean, some of the kids had a tough time hitting their notes, but everybody was very
kind. A lot
kind.
Of courage, though.
Mm-hmm. Very tremendous amount of courage. Kevin?
So, Craig, it sounds like on the fundraising thing, people need to, you know, filter through all of those fundraising texts and emails they're getting to find the opportunity to support the Voice of Vashon with their
I cannot get past the political requests. I mean, they've accelerated probably 200 I get a day.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, my wife is getting the same thing.
Wow.
So statewide, of course, we had an EA-18G Growler crash on the backside of Mount Rainier. And there's a local connection there, by the way. One of our board members... nephew was flying the second airplane. There were two airplanes. It was a two-ship training mission. And they got on the backside of Mount Rainier. Visibility started getting so bad that they broke off and came back. And the other jet continued and ended up crashing. Now, I've read, of course, being a pilot and being interested in that sort of thing, that isn't what the military or the... NTSB refers to a CFIT, C-F-I-T, that's control flight into terrain. And it's probably the highest rate of fatalities of all accidents is CFIT that happens. One of the things that I found very gratifying, I read all of the news accounts and nowhere did anyone say that there were two women pilots. And I thought, wow. All they said was there were two aviators. They listed their names, and they said there were two Navy aviators. And I thought, wow, is that cool or what? Finally, I think it was this morning, I read an LA Times article, and they mentioned the fact that they were women. And the only reason they did was because the pilot, Wiley, I think her name was one of the women who flew the all-women flyby for the Super Bowl. He was one of those pilots. And that was the only reason they mentioned the fact that they were women. I thought, boy, that is cool. I really appreciate that. One other thing, I made some notes. You know that we lose more military people in training accidents. Between 2006 and 2020, we had over 5,600 service members killed in accidents, in training accidents.
Wow.
32% of all reported active duty military deaths during that time period was due to accidents, which is amazing to me. The other note I made is that when I was, everybody knows I was in Germany in an intelligence unit. I was loaned to the Canadian Air Force for a period of about 3 weeks. There were three of us were sent on temporary duty down to LAR, Germany, to their Canadian Air Force base there. It was after the Czechoslovakian invasion, and we threw out all of our manuals that had to do with the Soviets because we were way underestimated what they could do. And so three of us went down to help rebuild the Canadians' intelligence manuals. And while I was there, I was with a Canadian guy who was briefing a young pilot who was on a photo mission in an F-104 starfighter. They were known as a Widowmaker and for good reason. But anyway, during this briefing, the Canadian fellow that I was, my counterpart, said, before you go to your altitude for your run, there's a little hill there. You must stay at this altitude before until you cross that point. Well, that young man went out and flew that mission and actually was about 1 foot too low.
Wow.
And he hit the top of that little ridge It was just a rise. It wasn't even a ridge. It was just a flat area. And he hit that doing, 300 miles an hour or whatever it was. And, of course, was instantly killed and destroyed the airplane and everything else. And although we didn't go to the crash site, I saw a video or saw a film of the crash site, and it was amazing. But there's another, close connection to something like that. Anyway, okay, the Boeing inspections. What do you guys think about that? Oh, Kevin, go ahead.
I had a quick question for you on that, Truman. So sure. I'm looking, I worked at Boeing
and yeah.
worked in the part of the company that we heard about these different times of aircraft.
Sure.
And I had this impression that growlers had like a history. And I'm doing a little research here. Is it growler jets 36 times more likely to crash than prowler jets?
Oh.
Are you buying that? Does that make sense to you?
Well, the reason I think is speed. The older E6, I believe, was the the other aircraft. They were two pilot crew also, the side by side. They sit side by side, and they were a bit slower, and I think a bit more forgiving. The E18 is high speed, really slick. It's a fighter. I mean, it was built as a fighter.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And the not the Growler. What was the other one?
Well, the Prowler is
Prowler. This Prowler was
headline.
The
yeah.
That one was not. That was not a fighter by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, got it. Okay.
It was.
I have one other little story to tell about airplane crashes.
Sure.
I used to spend quite a fair amount of time up at Snoqualmie Pass.
Oh yeah.
Pretty much every weekend, and I knew the folks who ran the ski areas and stuff like that, the ski patrol at Alpental, they had the pro patrol. These are the folks who go off and clear the avalanches
right.
and stuff. They know that mountain like the back of their hand. And the small plane pilots at that time would fly using I-90 as a handrail get across the pass. And if you look at the map of I-90, you're pretty much heading north until you hit the summit, and then you need to take a quick left turn.
Yes, you do.
To continue to follow. And if you're not flying high enough, which is probably about 5,000 feet, you are very likely to fly into the mountain, right into Denny Mountain, which is there where Alpental is based.
Yep.
And there was a story one time where they were basically shutting down the mountain. They end of the day skiing. They were doing the final sweep. They hear an airplane, and all of a sudden, the noise of the engine stops.
Ooh.
And it's like, we think we need to look around a little bit.
Yeah.
And fortunately, they were able to actually discover that pilot had flown into the mountain. Mm-hmm. And apparently, I believe that, if I recall right, survived that landing. And they were able to bring him out. Days before GPS, I suspect, is when that was going on.
Well, I've actually flown that route more than once in a light aircraft. And they also fly it in the jets. The Navy does fly through that valley. I've seen them go over it, and they are screaming. And I don't know how they make the turn, but it's pretty amazing to see. Now talking about the Boeing inspections, what do you guys are you hearing about that? What do you think about that? Any comments about, especially from you, Kevin, being an ex-Boeing guy?
I think that's on the commercial aircraft side of the company.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was a different side from you, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, we did a little collaboration on technology development, but it wasn't my day-to-day. But I did, of course, commuting into work. We would have an opportunity, the Boeing folks, particularly us motorcycle commuters at that time, would hang out together. One fellow was in the test flight program, I think, for this – can't remember which airplane, but it was like all of a sudden he spent a lot of overtime hours like commuting to Everett
right.
from his normal place in downtown Seattle. And you'd ask him, hey, how's it going? And he would just go, oh, I'm going to Everett again.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you that
problems.
The FAA used to have a program that they called the NASIP. It's a National Aviation Safety Inspection Program. It's no longer in active use. And the reason that isn't is because what this was, they would bring in inspectors from all over the United States to come and they looked at I have to look at my notes here. They looked at airlines, maintenance programs, training schools, repair stations, external load operators. I mean, these are the people that they would inspect, and they would bring these inspectors from all over the states. And I've been through one of those with Alaska Airlines. And the reason that they finally had to quit doing that is because there was so much controversy between the local inspectors and those folks that would come in and look at it. And I think they may be having the same issue at Boeing, because they're bringing in people from all over the country to do this big inspection. And the local guys are saying, hey, you know,
yeah,
what are we, chop liver?
Yeah, you know? nobody likes it when someone comes walking in on their turf,
exactly.
You know, sort of, it's always sort of the local versus national kind of turf battle. Yeah. And here we are, the consumer perhaps caught in the middle.
Indeed.
Of that.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, right.
I will have to tell you just a quick NASIP story though. I picked up an airplane in Juneau. The airplane came in and the captain came off and I was picking up the airplane to continue on with it. And he said,
did that airplane weigh, Truman?
How much did it weigh?
How big an airplane you can pick up? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, I got it.
Dad jokes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he said, you've got an FAA inspector on board. And it's one of these NASIP guys. And he was from Atlanta. And it's just a heck of a nice guy. And so he, you know, looked at all of our paperwork, which he asked to do. And then the route of flight was Juneau to Petersburg to Wrangell to Ketchikan and then on to Seattle. It was kind of the milk run down the back. And so we take off and we fly the approach. And on that approach, you're in the clouds until you break out and then you see the valley and the river going up where Petersburg lies. And in order to land into the wind, we had to circle. So we had to fly up into the canyon. And you fly along the edge of the ridge there. And the trees are, I mean, your wingtip is just zipping right along by the trees. I see this guy kind of leaning over, looking out the window like, oh, man, they're coming close to those trees. And then we turn up this valley. And you have to turn up a valley in the opposite direction in order to have enough room to turn around. And again, he's looking like, where the heck are these guys going? So we make that turn and we drop the gear and we come back around. And when we got ready to land, they actually had half of the runway closed because they were resurfacing it. So instead of having like 60 feet, we had like 30 feet to land on. I mean, it's a little narrow runway. We came in and landed on that and we taxied off the end of it. And he goes, well, y'all sure do some interesting flying up here in Alaska. And I said, well, if you think that's interesting, wait till the next leg. We're going to just fly visually down the channel at 1,500 feet. He said, 1,500 feet? I said, that's right. If we just fly visually down the land at Wrangell. Yeah. Anyway, he was pretty impressed with the whole story.
You should have taken him into one of those beach landings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He would have really enjoyed that. Yeah, right. All right. So that's it for the Boeing and the local stuff. We got about 10 minutes here to go. How about the national stuff? You keep reading all these polls. Oh, it's 50-50 and whatever. What do you think? Do you think these polls are accurate? Do you think it really reflects what people are thinking? I mean,
it is concerning.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know if somebody asked me, I'd lie.
Well, there is that hope that there's a silent of individuals who aren't telling exactly
what
they're going to do. But which way does that fall?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And is it split? And, you know, of course, the media is invested in making it a horse race all the
of
way
course,
to the end.
Of course.
You know, so
well, so is the Harris campaign. Mm-hmm. I think the ongoing theory on that is that Trump is now all he's doing is announcing that they're way ahead in every single state in the country, which is ridiculous, you know, in Washington State and California.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No.
So that if things go sideways, he can point that out. But and Harris and Walz are trying to keep that tension up in order to get people to the polls, get people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, anybody else voted yet here?
I'm ready. I'm going to turn it in this weekend.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, yes, I have.
Sitting on my table.
Good. You have, Kevin?
Yeah, I assumed you had. Yeah, my wife has, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, yeah. So, so you've got that tension going on. I was watching the news this morning, and there was a lot of the news, like you say, they try to keep, you know,
keep the tension.
Keep
up.
It exciting.
Sure.
Exciting is not the word I'd use, but
terrifying might be more.
About the blue wall in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. The theory being that if the Democrats lose Pennsylvania, it could be you know all over, but the crying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It is interesting to the red blue map and how it shakes out. Right, there's always the day of and the pundits like, okay, well, you know what. Bernanke, right? Ben Bernanke? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? One of the most famous memes to come out of 2016, mm-hmm. right? Just the guy just with his tie unloosed, pointing at stuff, and yeah. doing math on the fly.
I mean, that was Kornacki. Right?
Kornacki. Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah, Bernanke's the treasurer, the Fed, right? Ben Bernanke, the Fed guy. What are some election night plans folks have other than wine and Xanax? Anything?
Well, we're going to have champagne and beer. So the champagne and being able to cry in the beer right. or celebrate with the champagne.
Right. And when do we think we'll know? I mean, I'd loathe to say this because I want to make it true that we'll know at least by the next day. But what do you think? When will we know?
Well, I don't know. With all the BS that's going on with the certification, I'm not sure what we're going to know. You know,
it's hard to know, but I think, you know, by late that evening, early in the morning, we'll have a good
pretty
sense
good
of
idea.
Where it's
all
gone.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it takes a long time to process, particularly the states where they don't even start counting mail-in ballots until the day of the election,
right.
which is just kind of this crazy kind of thing. But and the fact that every election is run by sort of states or by local municipalities, and it's sort of like, wait a minute, you know, there's no standard. Australia and New Zealand have electoral commissions that run all their elections, so the elections are run exactly the same way whether you're out in the furthest back of the outback or whether you're in the center of Sydney. It's the same process.
And we
need to get there.
How long was it before they called Biden? Was it the weekend?
Oh, no, I think they called Biden that
fairly soon.
It was a few days.
Once Arizona went.
It was a few days, though. I just remember just for days kind of holding my breath. Yeah.
But I think a lot of the networks were calling it that next morning.
Yeah, they called it that within the, you know, just a few hours into the next day, even though all of the votes hadn't been counted. And Trump had declared victory because the early votes came in for him. But I don't know. The thing about the polling that I find fascinating is this whole thing about young white men without college educations, the shift in Latino voters. The Democrats still have the majority in the polls with Latino voters, Latino. But a diminishing lead over prior elections and a diminishing lead amongst blacks. And you just wonder how much of that is true and what effect will that have?
And I think it has to do with being a woman running.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. I think it doesn't have anything to do with character, politics, whatever. It's male, it's gender.
Sexism raises its ugly head once again.
Yeah.
But the problem with modern polling, I think, is it's all based on a scientific model that sort of lets you poll, you know, 1,500 people and get a sense of what the nation's doing.
Exactly.
And once at one point that was probably pretty accurate. I think what's happened with polling is it's just become, the nation's become this set of sub-tribes and sub-areas that it's almost impossible to get a national reading on it. I think local polls are probably pretty good, but national polls, and then you get into what you guys talked about earlier, the fact that people aren't answering the polls, you know, accurately. They're sort of gaming the pollers.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I think this one in particular, as we do the postmortem of the election and the postmortem of the polls, we'll have a much better sense of how inaccurate the polling is at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kevin.
And yeah, I agree, Bruce. You know, they the pollsters always make adjustments, and there's, you know, from year to year they learn and say, okay, we didn't call it right, so let's tweak this and change that. And it is models, right? Mm-hmm. So the other challenge is that the situation keeps changing, right? We have different technologies in terms of people using landlines versus now cell phones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that also throws in some uncertainty. And then the disclosure, right, the willingness to say who you're voting for, and even the willingness to pick up the phone. To even talk to a pollster. But I do look at the polls as giving some indication of trending. And most of the time, somebody will, you'll see this like, hey, a poll just came in showing my opponent, you know, 2 points ahead of me, please donate.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, that's like within the margin of uncertainty, right? So a lot of what, when I'm looking at that data, a lot of what I'm seeing is noise on signal. It's just the variation in the different procedures and policies and techniques of the different pollsters. But there is some long-term trending it's looking like. It looks like Arizona and Nevada are trending towards a lean Democrat. And so those are a couple of states that, of course, benefited Biden and Harris when they won in 2020. The blue wall states are very competitive. Michigan has been trending towards more toss-up from lean Democrat. In Pennsylvania, Casey, one of the organizers, just moved that from lean Democrat to toss-up. And it looks like in Wisconsin also, there's just a slight trend to basically it says those races are narrowing. So, but when you're in that toss-up range, if you look at Cook Political Report, which is one of the groups I look at, they say the toss-ups are pretty evenly split, and it is like a coin toss. So that does raise the uncertainty. The other thing that I don't know if the pollsters can accommodate for, I just literally this morning dropped off 700 postcards to four battleground states. And I don't know how they, you know, take that into consideration, how influential those things that arrive in somebody's mailbox like 4 days or 3 days before Election Day, you know, how do they calibrate that? So a lot of uncertainty. So we'll see how things turn out, of course.
You know, I taught statistics to my graduate class. And the one thing that I learned in statistics is you can prove anything. It does not matter. And so that's one of the other things I take this.
Figures don't lie.
Yeah.
But liars sure can.
Well, they could really figure,
Well, so. And, you know, locally, though, it is good news, at least from my chair, that the billionaire, millionaire-backed amendments are looking at going down. All the 21s, right? 2109, 2124. Well, that's a little bit of a toss-up. 2117, natural gas. Well, it depends. I don't know. That one is a kind of a late dark horse, that natural gas. There's just not a lot of knowledge out there about that.
Yeah, Kevin.
Well, there are some things in the state that I think are really intriguing. First of all, congressionally, Marie Glusenkamp Perez now takes first place of the closest congressional Washington state race away from Dr. Kim Schreier. Dr. Schreier's, the pundits are saying that, very likely she's going to get reelected. Ferguson, they have him as a likely Democrat. So the governor's race looks like it's pretty decent hands. If you look at the poll, the votes that come in during the primary, you know, Washington is about a 57 to 60% progressive, quote, Democrat-leaning state. So whether the messaging, you know, to that all of those initiatives should be defeated, if you share my values, we just have to make sure that message gets out there. But I have a pretty high confidence that the state of Washington is going to prevail and maintain the kind of progressive leadership that we currently enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, by the way, the Beachcomber, I was invited to write a commentary. So this week, you know, more detail than what we can have time for here, just to show the perspective of kind of what I'm looking at when it comes to the November 5th election.
Great, great.
Oh, at the national level as well as the state?
Yeah. In the commentary, I talk about what, you know, do we need to get to 270 for the Electoral College? Literally, it's the three blue wall states give you just 270. Talk about the Senate and some strategies to support House members to be able to deliver, cross our fingers, the Senate, and more likely the White House. If you're interested, we've got some resources too for people who still want to get involved and help to influence the outcome. There's still a couple weeks, so a lot can happen in 2 weeks.
All right, Amy, so you're up for next week, eh?
Yeah, next week is going to be spooky. It's Halloween. Yeah, we've got, we'll have a Halloween show. So we'll have the Parks Department is going to come. Eric's going to talk about their haunted house that they're going to do in movie.
Great.
And then Nicole from the Chamber will come and talk about Halloween Uptown. And Tara from Vega will talk about their haunted haunted village that they're going to do at the farmer's market. So there'll be a whole bunch of spooktacular good times coming up next week for everyone.
Excellent. All right, folks, we're out of time. So, hey, thanks, everybody, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We do appreciate it. So for Bruce, Amy, Craig, Kevin, me, see you all next week.